The Touchdown City Show is presented by Masters Law Firm, West Virginia's personal injury lawyers, and Parmar Stores. If there's not a Parmar store near you now, there will be one soon. Coming to you from the Stone Church Studio in St. Albans, West Virginia, this is the Touchdown City Show.
And welcome into the Touchdown City Show, presented by our friends at Masters Law Firm and Parmar. If there's not a Parmar near you now, there will be one soon. I'm Anthony Lewis in the Stone Church Studio. A little chilly in here today in Avon. No heat. No heat today. Michael Sussman, Derek Bailey, and the GOAT. Who's straight chilling in the Stone Church studio today.
Chill, son.
Yeah, son. It's the definition. This is the podcast version of the show. Thank you guys so much for downloading it this week as we talk about West Virginia's disastrous performance in Norman, 59-20 in the 15th meeting between the Sooners and the Mountaineers. West Virginia is now 3-13. You guys know the victories?
Like 81.
82.
The Fiesta Bowl and last year.
Yeah, that's it. All those times.
What was it? 41-27, 48-28, and 23-20, I think, were the scores.
That's good, because I don't know.
Yeah, of course he knows the scores.
So let me ask you guys this. Just going into, outside of Avon, did you guys expect to win? Did you guys really expect to win this game?
I mean, the players did not. I did. I did after the BYU performance. It was explosive.
You were excited.
Like, there was so much juice at the BYU game. I kind of fell for it. I thought it was real. One thing Neil Brown has not been good at is capitalizing on momentum, so I shouldn't have thought that we were going to win. But, yeah, I expected to.
I picked Oklahoma to win, and I didn't think West Virginia would. I thought they had a shot because I felt like Oklahoma was trending down. But clearly I was wrong on the even having a shot because that was ugly.
Yeah.
Well, I actually thought they were going to win, and it had nothing to do with Neil Brown. I thought that the guys, they had a – again, like Mike said, after that that just beatdown they did of BYU, I'm like, man, there's no way they're going to lose this game. And they understood, or at least I thought they did, the what they needed to do to be – I mean, think about what happened yesterday. They were in the driver's seat to go to the championship. And I was talking, things happened the way they needed to. If they would have won that game, there's no way that they wouldn't have made it.
We talk about opportunity all the time, right?
Oh, my goodness, man.
What? Didn't capitalize on opportunity. Let me ask you another here. A follow-up question from the guy in the navy blue. Did we expect to give up 59 points to Oklahoma?
Now, that's where it becomes disappointing. All right, listen, exactly. I can understand losing a game. You lose at Oklahoma. Yeah, Oklahoma gets better players. Oklahoma gets better talent. There's nothing wrong with that. But the 8 touchdowns is an Oklahoma record. So in the illustrious history of that school, West Virginia becomes the first team to give up 8 touchdowns to a quarterback for Oklahoma. Think about it. This is a team that won, 57 games in a row at one point back in, like, the 1950s under Wilkinson. This is a team that's won national championships, Heisman trophies. They had Riley with that offense with Mayfield and Murray. They had Sam Bradford Baylor in there. And you're talking – but West Virginia is the first team to ever give up 8 touchdowns to an Oklahoma quarterback. That is absolutely inexcusable.
Dumpster juice.
Speaking of dumpster, I mean, again, the guy is – And we're talking about the defensive coordinator who, I told you, I just was not high on this guy at all. Like, I knew he's just a fart in the wind. It's just gonna it's gonna blow away. Like, he just doesn't have sustainability because of who he is as a person. Now, I don't know him as a person, but as a coach. Yeah, I mean, but I like to say it as a person because I feel it filters down. Like, I'm not going to talk about his home life.
You want to make it personal.
Yeah, I just want to make it personal. Because, I mean, we talk about this. I mean, most of us in here, besides the Michigan guy, this really, it kind of affects our day-to-day. You know what I mean? After the game, it just, you're just down. And I mean, that beatdown, I mean, that was a beatdown yesterday, guys.
Yeah, it was a tiresome one. You could hear the exasperation in Tony Caridi's voice while I was on the way home. It feels like everybody quit. You gave up 644 yards, not just the run or the pass. It was both of them.
It bothers me, too. I don't think that this don't bother me. It pisses me off, quite frankly. It really does. Because you sit there and I expected Oklahoma to win the game. I'm completely content with West Virginia not winning games against these teams that bring in great players. However, you expect them to compete. You expect them to make a game close, not give up a 60-burger. I mean, guys are streaking down the middle of the field. We talked about it. We've talked about it over and over and over. It's not like they're playing Central Florida and BYU and Oklahoma State, who plays very little defense. When you play a legitimate competition and a team that it can exploit issues within your team, you see it. Yesterday, we saw it on both sides of the football. West Virginia was exploited. I mean, and that's just unfortunate, but it's just the facts.
Gabriel, 423 yards in the air, 5 touchdowns. Oklahoma had 2 receivers with over 100 yards. Stoops, 164 yards, 4 touchdowns.
He went dumb.
That dude.
He went dumb.
It was just like, is him anyone going to cover this guy?
At least they hit him in the end zone.
Yeah.
It's a little too late, though.
Well, I mean, even Anderson had 4 catches for 119 yards. He didn't get in the end zone, but he was like, what, 29 yards of a catch or something crazy?
It's crazy.
Like
he hit 9 of them over 20 yards.
I mean, that's incredible. That's absolutely – I don't know if that's a credit to their offense or just a testament to how bad West Virginia played defensively. Like, what was the game plan on defense?
I mean, so
– try
so
to the, tire them out by letting them run wide open?
The player of the game was Beanie Bishop, right? Right?
I mean,
he's tired, boss. Let's get him.
He dropped an interception, though. He at least was in position to make a play. Nobody else was.
Salchuk, 22 carries, 135 yards on the ground. I mean, we were giving it up like
644 total yards.
Yeah.
644.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You know, Dabo, when West Virginia gave up 70 or put 70 on Clemson, Dabo fired his defensive coordinator. Was this Kevin Steele?
I think so. I think that's right.
Fired him for giving up 70 to West Virginia. At a certain point, when you make $4 million a year, you have to look around and look at the guys that you coach with, friends or not. I'm sorry, Avon. I would send your ass packing, and I'm sure you would do the same to me if we were on the cut. You got to go. And this is – it's when you're making that kind of money, it's not personal. It's total – it's business. Now, Coach Nealon made $200,000 in his 20th season. These guys make – so much more money. The coordinators, Blaine Stewart makes more money than Don Nealon made his last season.
So in 2000, Don Nealon was making like $200,000. Blaine Stewart's now, say, making $225,000. That's absolutely incredible. Wow.
23 years later. So my thing is, it is a business now, and you're not producing. Jordan Leslie,
go.
You need to call my friend Casey Quinlan. He's a realtor. Sell your house. I mean, the defense is just terrible.
The defense is – I mean, there's always been that. You know what I mean? They've made plays against inferior opponents. I mean, think about it. It wasn't Texas Tech. Who was that we hurt their quarterback? Was that Texas Tech?
Texas Tech, they hurt the quarterback.
Yeah. So he was going to shred us if he didn't – freaking get hurt, he was going to absolutely destroy us. And I mean, almost every team that we played after that had a first-year quarterback or
a backup.
And you've seen the teams that did have them. I mean, Oklahoma State, they just ran the ball all on. They didn't have to throw the ball. But when they did, I mean, they were completing passes like crazy.
Yeah, and yesterday they were able to spread WVU out so much. I mean, the idea that we'd be able to cover those guys man-to-man is just delusional, and there were no adjustments.
And then we gave up, what did I say, 160 or 100 and
the guy ran
135 yards. We could get 91 more yards to their backup backs.
They had 600. They had 644 yards. It's incredible. Like, we talked about the defense. We knew they were going to give up big spots, big plays, things like that. We knew that was going to happen. They didn't force any turnovers yesterday, bottom line. I mean, well, they might have forced a fumble. No, they recovered a fumble and a punt.
Yeah.
So they didn't force any turnovers. They didn't do what they needed to do. They need to have big plays. And yesterday, they didn't have any big plays, bottom line. And that's the difference. A good team can exploit your weaknesses, and that's what simply happened.
Well, I'll take responsibility. If Jordan Leslie's not going to, I will.
Every time you have one of those, West Virginia loses. Ofer.
We had a good time, though.
Ofer the Sugar Bowl Foundation. What game is it next year? Because I'm telling the coach ahead of time, you ain't winning that one.
So we need. You should have waited until Christmas to do that.
Basketball game.
You know, I mean, no, I'm talking about the last game of the season. We should have did it against Baylor. Like, we would have won that.
Yeah, it's too close to Christmas.
That's what I'm saying. Though. Go to Christmas. I mean, that's where, you know, you have to work a little harder, a little sooner, but at least we can guarantee.
It's not me. I don't
win.
Wrap all those presents.
I wouldn't guarantee anything against Baylor on the road. I don't trust this staff still. I don't trust. They should beat Baylor. I'm not saying that they won't, but I do not trust them. I wouldn't guarantee it.
I told everybody at the event yesterday, we'll do it like when they play Duquesne or somebody the second week of the season. So,
oh, God, that'll be a disaster.
Oh, my goodness.
We've actually won a few of them. They weren't the actual – The mainstay event is the Christmas event in November, but we sometimes we'll have like bowl things and basketball for other stuff.
We didn't win those either.
But yeah, we've won a few. Won a few bowls.
The ones I've been to.
They have won a couple.
We're like 3-28.
It's not pretty. It's not pretty.
We're like West Virginia's basketball shooting. 3-28.
Man, didn't we just lose? Didn't basketball just lose to a money game? Like,
no,
lost
man.
Lost a money game.
Monmouth is an NCAA tournament team. They finished 7-26 last year.
Oh, my goodness.
We already got basketball rolling. Yeah. Here we go.
So, all right. Are we going to talk about Neil Brown?
Yeah, we'll get to that. Hey, later in the show, let me handle the business.
Sorry.
Pay some bills.
Let me handle the business here. Alumni Hall trivia question of the week, 304-305-2-TDC. 304-305-2832. We'll do that later in the show. Write that phone number down. Do we even want to discuss offense, or do you guys want to go straight to Neil Brown?
Hang on. I want to talk about the offense for at least a second. I don't even care what happened. I don't want to talk about that.
First and goal.
Not even any of that. When you play inferior opponents, your offense looks great. When you play people that are actually good on defense, your offense looks awful. That's exactly what we saw last night. Green was 10 for 27. He was not efficient. We had talked about him throwing the ball. He hasn't been he hasn't been great completion percentage. Last night was a prime example. A team with a legitimate defense can make him look subpar.
So even at 50%, he should have completed 16.
I'm not pointing the finger at Garrett Green or anything like that. I'm not saying this is his fault because it was a collective unit of suck from the offense, defense, and everything else. But it was, you scored 20 points last night. You had about 350 yards or something. But, I mean, how much of it was really legit? I mean, like
you – We left at least 13 on the field.
Yeah, and the fourth – don't even get me started on the fourth down play call and all that stuff. I mean, Donaldson just needs the ball straight ahead. He's 6'4", 260. Let him get downhill. I mean, it's not rocket science. But anyways, I just wanted to speak about that because – West Virginia had been scoring, 34, 39, 37, whatever they put on Central Florida, 41.
Terrible.
That's great.
Teams.
That's great and all. But then you play Oklahoma and you get 20.
You know, one thing I will say, though, is Donaldson, he was still running hard last night.
Oh, yeah.
Now, again, you're playing better competition, so he didn't hit the 100 mark, but he finished with 79 yards on 14 carries. Probably not enough carries for him, but I didn't even list how many White had. And then Garrett took some, too. But the offense just looked, the first possession they came out, went down the field and scored. And I thought, we might be able to hang around this game for a little bit. And then the floodgates opened and the party was on for Oklahoma. The goal line stand, though, I mean, and you guys could tell me a little bit more about it because we were out publicly and it's hard to see and hear and dissect everything. I just know this. When you got the ball first and goal from the one, you should probably score.
Did you think he got in?
I thought he got in, not on the fourth down play. I thought they got in. I think it was the first down play.
I thought
he got in that play. And I don't know how it's 2023 and you can't have a camera right across that goal line. I do not understand that.
Why wouldn't you have a camera on a fourth down? Like, why wouldn't you?
You should. Yeah, I mean, like.
I mean, to me, that makes no sense. That is NCAA That should be rule number one. If it is a fourth down play, if it is a third and short play, all cameras are focused in that area. On top, on the sides, everything is. And I just don't understand why that wasn't. I mean, there was no angle from the goal line, and there's cameras on the pylons. Like, what? I'm missing something. I'm totally missing something.
But I thought he got in on first down. Fourth down, I wasn't sure on fourth down. I really couldn't tell if he got in or not. But I mean,
saw that shovel pass again.
Yeah, like Anthony says though, you have the ball first and goal. If you can't gain a yard, you don't deserve to win anyway. You got four downs to get it. Get 1 yard. You can get 1 yard.
I just think it. You know, if you're going to run that little pitch play, that shouldn't have been your fourth down call.
I would have ran C.J. Donaldson four straight times up the middle.
I would have got Danny Don on the phone and said, Coach, he would have said, Coach, now get in the I formation.
And run the football.
Run the football. Bring your tight end in motion score the football. I mean, that's the thing. Sometimes these coaches outthink themselves.
That's the biggest issue that I think goes on.
Speaking of outthinking himself, Neil Brown. I mean, where are we at with this guy?
Neil Brown is... He's so worried about what the fans think, what the players think, as opposed to how coaches think. And I don't know if you guys agree with me on this. It is end of the half. Go get some points. And then the defense turns around and get the ball back, and now you're right back down there again. Go get the points. And I think we were like 21 to 7, something like that. So I can't remember what the score was, but we go get points. We're 10. Then we go score again. To me, I'm like, what is this guy thinking about? Like, what is going through his mind? Like, is he worried about what his players are going to think? Go get the points. I mean, you first down, I think we got in on first down. Second down, we didn't get in. Third down, we didn't get in. They called a timeout on fourth down to make sure that you were sure that you were going to go kick the ball. Go get the points.
Because there was a certain point after we scored, I think we hit Taylor. I thought to myself, we should only be down 10 right now, and you're back in it.
Right.
We've talked about the fourth downs and everything, and since the pit one, it felt like he's gone for every single one. Why are you going for it on fourth and two from your own side of the football field early in the game?
Right.
That was fourth and two, he goes – now, you know, Green threw the ball to the middle. It was almost intercepted, incomplete pass, but it's Oklahoma's ball. Your defense is already struggling. At least punt and give them a chance. I mean, they had to go, 44 yards or something for a touchdown. Why go for that there? Like, the whole tenure, like, it's just – to me – I don't care if they win the next two games. To me, it's not good enough. It's flat out, looking at it from the entire 5 years. First of all, it's exciting to be 8-4. Let me go ahead and say that. 8-4 is a pretty good season for WV football for expectations. Like, most fans don't expect you to be a blue blood and go out there and go 11-1, 10-2 every year. The thing is, though, is 8-4, you've really beaten no one. Don't say that, oh, well, they exceeded expectations.
Really beaten no one.
Well, but they exceeded expectations. Yeah, they did exceed expectations because expectations are so low. Let's be honest. If you took Central Florida, BYU, Houston, and Cincinnati off that schedule and replaced them with Kansas, Kansas State, Texas, and Iowa State, guess what you're getting?
Four L's.
You're getting four losses. That puts you out of a bowl game. That puts you at, 3-7 or 3-9, whatever it is. I don't know. I don't care. The fact of the matter is he's not getting the job done, and I like Neil Brown. I want Neil Brown to be successful because I see he seems like a really good dude. It's just not happening. We're not better in any phase of the game. For 5 years, it has been the same thing. There's been no improvement. What's better? What's better for WV right now? Is the offense, defense, special teams, offensive
line, defensive line? The quarterback rushes for more yards now than he has in the last 4 years.
Whoop-de-doo, and he can't throw.
And just so unprepared on the road again. At least once a season, the team just lays an egg.
The first year, we saw the second game of the season. The first year,
Missouri,
38-7.
Yeah, and that was the standard moving forward. I don't know. I don't want to. I'm just kind of at the point like it's kind of all playing out. We knew that West Virginia wasn't going to win this game, so I don't want to get into like a 50-minute podcast on this. So, they've got two more games, 8 wins. All right, so let's say they finish 8-4. Is that good enough for this year? Would you guys extend him?
I personally would not, just because another coach could take us further from here than Neil could. And he's just being an opportunist. The schedule's set up this year, so you played a lot of easier Big 12 teams. Right. We got Cincinnati and Baylor left.
There's no way. There's absolutely no way.
Derek, you're just negative.
I am being negative, and you can call me negative, but it's factual. Seriously, think about this. You look at that schedule. You look at that schedule in the preseason, and you say Duquesne, Cincinnati, BYU, Houston, Central Florida. Look how bad Pitt is. Look how bad Pitt is. You look at that schedule.
They got beat by Syracuse yesterday.
They're like 3-8. Somehow they beat Louisville. I don't know. That's six games that you look at, though, in a normal West Virginia year for normal expectations, and you say, that's six sure wins right there.
Right.
You look at Oklahoma State at home, and you say, that's a winnable game at home. That's seven wins right there. Then you look at how bad Baylor is. You say, that's eight wins right there. And then there's a couple other teams on the schedule that weren't as good. TCU's not as good as they were last year. That's nine wins right there.
We played two backup quarterbacks.
And the Texas Tech game, you play a backup quarterback. Oh, gee, all of a sudden you look at it and you say, well, West Virginia's got a legit shot to go 10-2 with a loss to Penn State and Oklahoma in normal years. Just because my expectations were low coming in and they exceeded it,
but that
doesn't mean I'm happy.
That's exactly what it should have been. That's why it's not good enough. That's why him coming back, like, again, we're going to start all over again. That's the only thing, only reason why I wouldn't say let him go, because you got to start all over again. You got to get a new – your kids got to learn a whole new offense, a whole new defense, and the culture has to be – this guy has to bring in his culture, and the kids got to buy into him. And that's the only reason why I would say don't do it.
See, that's what we did with Holgorsen, and that didn't pay out. People were like that with Holgorsen. Mm-hmm. Do we want to start over? Do we want to – yes, we want to start over because it's the same crap with this guy every year, too.
The quicker you admit to a mistake, the better off you are.
Right.
I agree. I mean, that's fine. And again, what we're saying is, like you said, you could say look at that schedule in a normal year. Most Mountaineer fans like that have watched football and followed the Mountaineers closely would have looked at it and said, man, they can go 10-2 against that schedule. Right. They can go 10-2.
Should go 10-2.
And here we are talking about what a great season 8-4 would be.
Well, we're not saying it'll be a great season. We're saying it exceeds
expectations.
It exceeded. Because, I mean, everybody picked them to be a flop.
Right.
Because nobody believed in Neil Brown. That's the key. Like, your coach kind of dictates how your season – nobody believed in this guy. Yeah. Like, no, I mean, they picked him dead last. The teams that's coming in that were –
right.
I'm like, come on.
And to the administration, 8-4 will be like he won the natty.
Yeah, let's extend him. Speaking of coaches that we love and we respect, this week's Alumni Hall Trivia Question of the Week, 304-305-2TDC, 304-305-2832. The question this week for a $25 gift card to Alumni Hall, coaches we love, Coach Don Nealon. Played what position at Bowling Green? A little tougher this week. No softballs.
Yeah, that was.
That's $25.
That wasn't. I know you know.
What position at Bowling Green? If you know it, 304-305-2TDC. You don't know, Avon?
I don't know.
All right, we'll call him here in a few minutes, and ask him. We'll let him tell you.
Yeah.
All right. This week, just real quick, some quick scores, and then we'll get into some headlines. Texas over TCU, 29-26. Texas in a close game with the Frogs. Anthony Beck's boy, Rocco Beck, 45-13 over BYU. And the shocker of the week, let's get into this one. Central Florida hammers Oklahoma State, 45-3. Man, we were trying to crown Ollie Gordon.
I don't know what happened. 25
yards.
I saw that point spread on last Sunday. Oklahoma State was a 2.5-point favorite. And anybody that gambles or knows about gambling that follows this point spreads and everything, they'll look at that line and they'll be like, 2.5 to Central Florida? I'm picking Oklahoma State. Meanwhile, Las Vegas is out there dying laughing because you do that. And they suckered everybody in. Mm. And then, boom. 45-3 later, you're like, oh, it's a sucker bet, because it was a huge letdown spot for Oklahoma State. Central Florida probably made their season. You know, you're playing a top 15 at home. But, yeah, I thought Ollie Gordon would run wild on them. Obviously, he did not.
That was bad. That was crazy. I'm like, man. And, I mean, their running back went dumb.
It was over. It was over in the first quarter.
Like,
it was over.
Their running back I think he probably had like 200 yards rushing against against Oklahoma State. It was crazy.
Well, breaking news on the wire, Jimbo Fisher fired at Texas A&M. 75 cool ones on the way out the door. Which door you want me to go out?
What time you want me to leave and what door you want me to go out?
What time you want me to go? 75 M's to leave. Man, my pride is not hurt at all.
Yeah. I got fired on purpose.
Yeah. Now you don't have to work and make $75 million. Your family is set up. That is baseball money that he just
$75 million to not. Hey, coach, is that that's Texas? That's what oil money does for you right there.
Oh,
that's
my goodness.
Hey, but hang on too. They may finish 8-4. Texas A&M is saying 8-4 isn't good enough, and they're historically kind of, in my opinion, on par with WU. They just have more money.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying 8-4 is not good enough. They're firing a coach and paying him $76 million to not coach. Think about that. And they're willing to spend $75 more to bring in a new coach. My guess, what they're going to do is they're going to throw a massive, like $15 million a year at somebody. I don't know who it's going to be, but it's going to be somebody. Of course, the name that's going to be thrown out is Urban Meyer. He's probably not going to take it, but they might throw $15 million a year at Urban Meyer.
I never thought A&M was a good fit for the SEC.
I thought they was. I mean, to be honest, when they transferred from the Big 12 to SEC, I was like, man, I thought they were good. I thought it was a great fit because of the way Texas and
that was Manziel, man.
But I mean, it's just to me, I don't know if they're a great fit in the SEC or not. It doesn't matter to me. Well, they're just kind of like in whatever conference they've been in. It feels to me like they've always been the second fiddle at best because they were in
the Penn State.
They were in the Southwest Conference with Texas. Then they went to the Big 12 Conference with Texas and Oklahoma. Now they're in the SEC, and you got Alabama, you got Georgia, you got Oklahoma and Texas coming in, you got LSU. It just kind of feels like they're kind of like a second fiddle, second tier program right now. And they're trying hard to get to that first tier, so kudos to them.
I mean, but they're spending the money. That's why they fired them. They didn't fire them because they paid them. They fired because they paid all these players. And they're like, hold on, you have the best talent in America, and you can pull it together.
They said they gave $32 million for that one recruiting class or something like that, for the one that finished number one overall a couple of years ago.
Jeez.
They said they spent $32 million on that. Now, I don't know if that was true or not, but that's what the rumors were out of, like, the SEC areas.
Speaking of, the next coach to get fired, Jim Harbaugh, on a 3-game suspension in Michigan.
Well, here we go. Let the Michigan guy. But before you go, I
like the way I set that up.
Yeah, you did. That was fantastic. In my opinion, I do think he needs to be suspended. I don't know about fired, but at the same time, I don't think his team should have access to go to any bowl games if they were cheating. And again, because if you're cheating me and I'm on the field playing and. You do not have the right to be able to compete against people that's not cheating or people that are not alleged to be cheating.
Okay, you've been on coaching staffs before and played. Was that like a guy on the staff? Like, have you ever been a part of a sign stealing operation? What is the line on that? CFL, college football.
No, I mean we CFL. You had the microphone, so we never you didn't have to, but. College football, no. I don't know of.
I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think it's common.
It's not a big of a deal to you because you're not playing. If you were playing and somebody was stealing your stuff.
Hide them better.
So actually, it's
not the stealing what got them. It's the fact that this dude was going to the rule states. You cannot go and scout on site, period. And that's what got him.
Hang on. They don't have proof that this dude was on site still. No one has proof.
That's not him in that mustache, like Terry Francona.
They have not identified. Like, Central Michigan has no idea who the dude is. It can be anybody. I mean, do I think it's him? I absolutely do. Now, here's the thing about.
Okay, that's all you need.
Yeah, right. Like, what are we talking about here, bro?
This is what's going on. In the preseason, Jim Harbaugh made a comment about how the players should get some of the revenue from the TV contracts. This is an absolute witch hunt. Of a deal. It's hilariously bad. It's so stupid, I can't believe people are falling for it. Let me ask you something.
You sound like a political candidate.
No, hang on. Are we in midget league football? How much money a year does Ryan Day make to coach Ohio State football? How much money a year? $11 million? How about this? Be professional and change your signs. These coaches make millions. Change your signs. This isn't freaking midget league football. This is major college football. Also, if you go and read the rule book, because everybody and their brothers posted it and circled it and highlighted it and whatnot, this is at best a level 2 violation. Tennessee just committed 5 level 1 violations. You know what they got? Nothing. How many level 1 violations did those NCAA basketball coaches on wiretap with the FBI commit? Why did none of them serve a suspension? Why did none of them really get anything?
I'm not agreeing. I think it is a little suspicious about how fast this happened. I mean, it took them 6 years to figure out who was on that wiretap offering cash, but then they can figure out in 2 weeks and then make this ruling. They can't even make any rulings. It takes them 6 months to get smoke signals to those cornfields in Indiana to make decisions. And this comes down in 2 weeks.
I'm going to ask you this too, Avon, because you've coached. Have you ever heard of a coaching staff getting somebody's signals and sending it to the opponent that they play the week of the game?
No.
Because they were doing that to Michigan. And there's proof of it. Michigan gave that proof to the NCAA. Rutgers stole, I think it was the offensive signals. Ohio State stole the defensive signals and sent them to Purdue for the Big Ten championship game. That's incredible. To me, what would you rather have? Grainy cell phone footage of a fan that Michigan was apparently alleged to have paid to go to these games and film the sidelines? Or would you rather have what the coaches came up and prepared and sent an Excel sheet with all the information on it? What would you rather have?
Yeah, I mean, give me that proof. But so let me ask you this. Because, you know, talking about what allegedly happened, and again, I want to go back to putting yourself in that situation. I know you're a Michigan guy. It's a witch hunt. So be it. But if you were on the teams that, and again, Michigan probably didn't even need to do that with the teams that they did it against.
Fact.
If you were a player and you know that, man, I may have had a chance to win this game, and you're on the other side, would you not want something to be done?
Well, I mean, personally, I don't know. I'm going to say this too. I didn't even know that this was a rule. I did not know that this was a rule. I didn't know you weren't allowed to go to games and scout, because, like, I just assumed you were allowed because the NCAA tournament, the coach sets courtside after the game. Like, if you play the first game, the coach sets, but I guess you're only allowed to in-game scout, quote, whatever, during tournament play. And I didn't know this was a rule. So, if somebody stole my signals, I wouldn't be outraged at the opponent that stole them. I would be outraged at the coaching staff that's getting paid to not have my signals stolen.
That's bull.
How would
that's bull?
Okay,
crap,
okay, hang on. Let me ask you this. Before NIL became relevant, if you heard a team that you were playing against spent $2 million on a bunch of ineligible players at that time, would you feel cheated?
No.
You wouldn't feel cheated?
No.
Because to me, if you're buying players, because to me, players, it's not about X's and O's. It's about Jimmy's and
but
Joe's.
But the difference is, it's leadership. It's so if I'm a player receiving that money, it's different than
No. I'm saying you didn't. I'm saying if you're on.
Like, no, I know what you're saying. You're saying. So if West Virginia went and got, you know, 17 different players, and I'm playing for Miami, should I feel a certain type of way?
Yeah, because I'm going to lay it down this way. I'm going to look at it this way, and I'm just going to use this analogy. Let's say you play college basketball for WVU, and let's say Duke comes in, and Duke's paid Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, and Wilt Chamberlain to come and play, and they've paid them $10 million each, and no one, quote, knows, and you're going out there against those five dudes in their prime trying to beat them. Do you feel cheated if they paid for those guys? Because to me, that's bigger cheating than stealing some stupid signal.
I don't think there's a hierarchy. If you're cheating, you're cheating.
No, I'm not disagreeing. You know what I mean?
More importantly, when you're doing it at a management level as opposed to, and again, it is a management level, but the player still got to go play. When you are knowingly going out, and again, there's no hierarchy in it. But my mind is if I lose a game because of coaching staff, I'm more pissed as opposed if I lose a game because of one of my teammates jump off sides.
Do you think a coach has ever walked back into his office and sat down in his chair and said, man, they got us because they stole his signals. They stole my signals.
The Dodgers did.
That's the only team that I can think that's done that, and that's baseball. That's a different sport.
So I played against a team that knew all, and we didn't beat them probably, we beat them one time when I in Maryland, I'm talking about Maryland. That's when Scotty McBrien, and then we had another quarterback went. They knew all, and we tried to change our signals.
And they still knew everything.
And they still knew everything because they knew formations. They knew so
what you did in the formations,
right? So I understand that. That's why I'm probably pissed because they, and again, they had really good players too. I'm not saying they beat us because they stole signals, but that to me, when it's on a management level, and it doesn't affect players, because players I can go get LeBron James. He shoots, you know, 4 for 12, you know, or 4 for 30, and we still win with those type of players. But when you got management doing it, to me that's so much worse.
Okay, I mean, and then I'm also going to look at it this way, because to me it's never been about stealing signals and this and that. To me, it's about players. Generally, whoever has the best players wins these ball games, in my opinion. I mean, my opinion.
Most of the time,
the players win the games. I don't care what offense you run. You have film on everybody. You can get the all 22 views. You can get whatever views you want to get. I don't care. Like I said, if somebody's worried about stealing a signal, put the microphones in the heads in the helmets.
I do agree. That is something they need to look at.
They have asked coaches on the record. They said, why can't we put microphones in the headsets? Because I've read about all this. They're like, oh, well, it's too expensive to do. Now, mind you, this is a billion-dollar industry. Off the record, these same coaches said, we're not doing that because we're stealing signals. I don't care how you steal a signal. I don't care if you go video. I can go video a sideline and post it to YouTube every single week. Think about that. I can do this. I can, quote, break this rule. This is Michigan going 65 and a 60, or even 80 and a 60, when other schools are going 150 and a 60, and they're getting pulled over. I mean, cheating is cheating, whatever. They broke a rule. They should be punished for it. Do I think suspending a head coach 3 games for a rule this minor that's a level 2 violation is right? I do not.
It's an Al Capone on tax evasion situation. They've been trying to get Harbaugh for years, and finally there's little proof.
He's got it right. But the thing is they can't even tie it back to Harbaugh. That's what's even bad about all of it. There's no proof. And now the Big Ten, by suspending him for 3 games, you're looking at a major, major, like, there's going to be, it's going to get really, really ugly, and Michigan may end up leaving that conference. That's my prediction on this. Michigan may end up leaving the Big Ten.
All right, let's take the conversation down to Huntington. I heard more Jim Harbaugh yesterday in the pregame. I was sick of hearing about it by the time noon rolled around. But we've held off from poking the bear for 3 weeks on all this, so I thought it would be the appropriate time after the suspension came down to get Derek going a little bit. But I'll wrap it up with this. I think that the timing of the suspension was correct. They don't have enough evidence. It was just way too fast.
Yeah,
there should have been something else that came out about it, or they should have had more evidence or looked into it more. Again, 5 years to hammer coaches that are on wiretaps talking about stuff. I mean, it's you, dude. Like, it's you.
The thing is, I agree with Michigan. What if they go in there and, like, they find more on him? You've already suspended him 3 games. What if they come back in and they find out that he was tied to something else, like illegal recruiting or something? You're going to come back in and suspend him for 15 more games? I mean, what is all this? It's crazy.
All right, let's talk about Marshall. They have some news this week. Marshall over Georgia Southern yesterday, 38-33. But the story is, for weeks, the fans down in Huntington have been screaming about Chad Pennington. His boy, Cole, finished the day yesterday 15-20, 201 yards. And the Marshall Thundering Herd fans are dancing in the street because they have been waiting for this kid. And it's crazy.
I didn't even know he played. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was starting. I did not watch this game.
I didn't know he was starting yesterday.
I did not watch a second of this game, so I really can't comment. But I'm going to go ahead and say this about Cole Pennington. He's going to have more pressure on him than anybody that's probably ever played football at Marshall just because of who his dad is.
Yeah. I mean, the only person that would have had more pressure would probably be Thaddeus Moss.
I mean, that's incredible. Just because of who their dads are.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Good luck to him. I mean, I think he's got some talent, and Huff is probably doing the right thing because he's not going to burn his red shirt.
Right.
He gets a look at him. They're probably going to win another game and go to a bowl, and then you got 4 years with him.
And also congratulations to him for winning that game too, because that's on the anniversary of the
the plane crash. Incident.
So good for them for winning that ball game.
So yesterday, Casey Turley, Turk, came to the event. We sat there and talked, and Casey has a jersey that belonged to Roger Childers from that team. And Roger was a St. Albans guy. So I'd always heard about Roger. And Casey has, you know, he's got a collection like you wouldn't believe.
He's got more stuff than...
I mean, you wouldn't believe the stuff this guy has. But he's got a Roger Childers Marshall football jersey. And, you know, it means a lot to him just because Casey's a St. Albans guy. You know, he went to St. Albans High School. And to have that piece of property in your possession as a sports collector, you know, I know it probably means nothing to WVU fans or even people outside of Huntington or even people outside of St. Albans, but it's like the Honus Wagner of like collectibles around here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a really, really cool piece. So, all right, let's get into it. Next week, they immortalize Coach Don Nealon in Morgantown, West Virginia, and the Cincinnati Bearcats. What are the predictions for the fight? Michael Sussman.
So we got WVU Cincinnati back. A lot of good memories with this old kind of rivalry. Cincinnati doesn't have Zach Kolaris or Tony Pike anymore, so that's a positive.
Thank you.
Kind of struggling finding their way in their first year in the Big 12. I think WVU reestablishes some swag, especially with the big boys up front. Neil Brown talked about it after the game. This is the first time that they really got out-muscled. The offensive line just flat-out got beat yesterday in Norman. There were plenty of other problems, but I think we established the run early and beat the Bearcats 31-14.
I mean, this should be cut and dry. West Virginia's going to win this game. Cincinnati's terrible. West Virginia's going to win like 38-17. It's not going to be a very good game. It's not going to be a very entertaining game. I mean, it will be for Mountaineer fans, but it's not going to be close. I don't think Cincinnati's very good at all. West Virginia should be able to manhandle them. Cincinnati has struggled mightily in the Big 12, so I got West Virginia 38, Cincinnati 17.
Yeah, on top of this, I mean, it's a bounce-back game for us, and I just feel bad for the players that they didn't come out the way they did following week or the previous week. Again, I mean, this is going to be big because they're going to get a whole lot of energy from a whole lot of older players that normally didn't have access to the facilities, didn't have access to the players, so they're going to get a whole lot of when I was in the league, when I was playing, from some guys that on the sideline,
my leather helmet,
right? I mean, and all of that's going to be there because
it's okay, Gramps.
Yeah, they're going to be like, man, would you get away from? But at the same time, they're going to see like this game is going to be bigger than just the Cincinnati game because there's going to be a whole lot of nostalgia, a whole lot of
the legends are in the building
are going to be there.
There's going to be some big time Mountaineers in that building.
So they're gonna rout these boys. It's not even gonna be close. Like it's gonna be like a 50 burger. Just to, you know, because of the energy that is gonna, and they probably don't even understand who this guy is that they're getting. You know, his name is getting immortalized. I mean, I'm sure he talked to him, but it's gonna be a great atmosphere. I'm excited. You know, I spoke to Coach early. He was like, man, are you coming? I'm like, how could I not? Like,
got to.
I will be there. So it's going to be one of those things where it's going to be about 50 to 20. You know, West Virginia is going to be flying high. Not even remember they got routed last week from Oklahoma.
I wonder if there's a player on the team. He said it. I wonder if there's a player on the team that was even born when Coach Nealon coached his last game for WVU. That was 2000. They'd be 20. I mean, I'm sure there's probably a transfer. A
couple of 23-year-olds, yeah.
I mean, there's not going to be very many of them.
Right.
I'm going to go West Virginia 41, Cincinnati 27. It's a very specific score because West Virginia opened the stadium with Coach Don Nealon in 1980 against Cincinnati and won 41-27. Oh, wow. So that's my score. Although I will be upset if Cincinnati puts up 27, but
I will be very upset.
But for nostalgia's sake, I will pick that score. I think you're right. I think, you know, think about the guys that are going to be in the building. I mean, Jeff Hostetler. I figure Mark Bulger's coming back. I know Joswiak's coming. The Major will be there. The guys, these dudes, I mean.
You wonder if it, like Aaron Beasley comes back and Bo Orlando. I mean, there's so many of those dudes that could come back, and there's so many great players.
Yeah, I mean, so they will be there, and I'm kind of I'm excited about this. You know, it's funny though. You know, it's funny the perception. You know, people would always give Coach Nealon a tough time because people don't understand what type of job West Virginia is and the success that he had there with guys that nobody else wanted. You know, you look at a guy like Anthony Becht, right? Not even a one-star recruit. Yeah. Wasn't even a one-star recruit.
And he was a first-round pick. Yeah. He was a first-round pick.
And he has a laundry list of guys that he took, developed, and just took a chance on. Yeah. And then he's got a laundry list of guys. I mean, not even just the NFL guys, but he's got guys that are federal judges, doctors, law. I mean, man, it shows you that it's not just about, obviously everybody wants to play in the league, right?
Right.
But it shows you the role a coach can make in a kid's life.
I would like to see the percentage. You said that about the playing in the league. Mm-hmm. I would like to see the percentage of each team. Like, you got 85 scholarships now. I bet you the percentage of each team that plays in the NFL, it's probably like, what, on average, I'm not saying, Alabama's probably got 35.
Well,
but right, you see what I'm saying? But I bet the average of the division, like FBS, I bet you the percentage is about 13%.
It's probably lower than that. Take out the top 15 schools, right? Yeah. The top 15, right. And then average them.
It's very low.
It's low. It's got to be low.
Yeah.
All right, guys. It's good seeing you guys. I mean, it wasn't a fun game, but it's good seeing you guys.
Yeah,
getting Derek wound up.
Yeah, it's always good to get this Michigan guy.
Hey, I was wound up about the Mountaineer game, man. I seriously was. I didn't expect him to win. Come on, man, you got to play better than that.
Come on, man.
That was I'm
terrible.
Terrible.
I don't know.
All right. Well, thank you guys for listening to the Touchdown City Show. Don't forget, Hoops has started for us. You can check that out. The Full Court Press. Over at PressVirginia.com. It was a big reaction last week, and that's all I'll say. If you haven't heard the first episode, go check that out with Coach Bob Huggins, and we'll be talking hoops again this week with him. That's at Press Virginia. And, of course, all your needs for Touchdown City is at TouchdownCity.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Visit our new website at touchdowncity.com. The Touchdown City Show is produced by Anthony Lewis in partnership with HD Media, the Charleston Gazette-Mail.